All right, well, it's Monday, and we're back at it again for another episode of the Charity Charge Show. I'm sitting here today with Preston James, CEO and co-founder of Div Inc. Thank you so much.
My man, how are you
for
doing?
For being with us. No, I'm doing great. You know, for people watching along that may not know, we actually were joking because we had a little bit of a pre-interview. You know, the nonprofit community is very vibrant here in Austin, Texas. And we were together at an event for the Entrepreneurs Foundation actually on Wednesday.
Yeah.
So we got to catch up a little bit there. And I'm really excited to be with you because I followed along over the past few years of your work at Div Inc. I'm pretty familiar with it. Obviously, I'm hoping to ask you some questions and we'll share more with our audience because I think it's a really incredible mission and platform that you're doing. And now 3 years or so into it, you know, I know you've seen a lot of successes and also had a journey, I'm sure, and learned a lot along the way to keep iterating your model. But I really appreciate you took the time to be with us.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate you coming on over, and pretty excited, you know, to be here with you and, you know, share our story and hopefully inspire others as well.
And you have a really interesting, and quite frankly, I was so impressed. I was saying before too, your career, when I was doing some more homework and just kind of looking up your chronological progression on LinkedIn. But jumping into it for right now, can you tell the audience, kind of share with us why you founded Div Inc., what the mission is, and some of the practical things that you were doing as you execute on that?
Sure, sure. So very interesting. I took an early retirement from Dell, and soon after, I was invited to become a mentor for startup founders here in the Austin startup ecosystem, and that it was at Capital Factory. And then a good friend of mine encouraged me to become an angel investor. And it was really interesting because I was like, well, why are you pressing me to become an angel investor? And her comment to me as a white woman who had been a serial entrepreneur, she's like, I can't recall having met a black angel investor in my time as a serial entrepreneur. And so I took some time and I researched that. And at that time in 2014, I was able to find only 10 African-American publicly known angel investors in the United States, let alone just Texas. And so, given the work that I had already been doing as a mentor, became an angel investor, I knew there was a lack of diversity already in the startup ecosystem, but to what extent and what the problems were, the challenges, I didn't really have a good understanding of that. Once I became a mentor, angel investor, I began to see this gap in terms of, number one, the number of people of color and underrepresented founders that were participating and actively getting opportunities in the startup ecosystem. And then the other piece was, you know, what was becoming very prevalent at the time was the lack of investment into companies founded by underrepresented founders. And that challenge for me was like, okay, well, why does this gap exist? You know, and in talking to founders, you know, I was able to really kind of confirm a few things. And number one, you know, in some of the co-working spaces we had around town, the cultures were not very welcoming. Some of them were quite intimidating. Some were costly. You know, another piece of it was that the networking. So we were all part of different networks. So how does a person of color or, you know, a women founder get access to a network of, you know, white male, predominantly white male, investor, high net worth environment, you know, venture capitalists? So our networks were disconnected. And you know, not having access to those networks meant not having access to those mentors, not having access to investors, not having access to opportunities, to education, and the list goes on and on. And so at that point, I said, okay, well, here I am living in this world where I'm in the world with angel investors, So I'm kind of over here with the white males, majority white males, mm-hmm. who are making investments into underrepresented founders. And then I'm also part of this community of underrepresented founders talking about lack of diversity in the startup ecosystem. So I found myself in a really interesting, unique position where I felt like I can bridge the two communities and really solve for, you know, how do we build a more inclusive ecosystem. And so the concept of DivInc came out of how do we make that happen? How do we become that bridge for the startup, traditional startup ecosystem and these underrepresented talent pool of founders and bring them together to broaden and build this ecosystem the way I feel like it should be, right? Inclusive. And so that was the premise behind DivInc. And also make it something programmatic, make it a community within the community itself, make it a culture in its own, and really sort of set a path forward to how we build the Austin startup ecosystem or any ecosystem, but Austin specifically, to be more inclusive of this talent that was not being tapped into. You know, so that was sort of the story behind that.
No, and we're going to get into some of I want to get into some of the details of the program and the impact that you're making and what you've seen over the past few years. I think it's eye-opening for me, and that's part of why I get a lot of joy out of doing, you know, these types of interviews, because I get, you know, kind of access one-on-one with you to be able to learn from you and, you know, other founders of nonprofit organizations and such. But when you bring this up, it's really opening my eyes. I'm kind of changing, like, in front of you. And I'll tell you that in my experience in the earlier days of Charity Charge, we participated in a lot of different pitch competitions, we never went through a formal accelerator, but different kind of things of that ilk, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things happening in the nonprofit ecosystem, a lot of different programs and such you can go through. And I remember in particular, and I don't say this at all as a knock to them, it just was what it was. There was an event that was being put on by a thing called the Challenge Cup that was happening in a variety of cities really across the world, and Austin was one of them. Mm-hmm. And then if you won your city or were a top, they would fly you to the main competition. At any rate, I mean, I never forget this. I remember that there were 60 companies initially in it, and you did a 1-minute pitch, and then the top 20 got invited to the next round. This was right. Just in Austin. Yeah. So I'm sitting there, and it was hosted at Capital Factory, mm-hmm. and they got 60 founders who are given a 1-minute pitch. It's gonna be an hour. You get 1 minute. So you just go. So they had us line up like cattle. Right. Okay, just one after the next. You had to go. Right. And I remember they're going, and I was towards, I don't know, the end or whatever. Ended up making it, by the way, probably to the finals, and then I got a wild card spot and I went to participate in DC. So I was one of like the four startups from Austin that went to DC. So that was cool. But I remember looking around, there was two of the 60 were women. And I can't think of anyone of color that was there either. That candidly just didn't stick, but the fact that there were two of 60 were women.
Right.
I'm like, what's going on here?
Right, right.
You know, and it just seemed like there was sourcing bias, or even it goes before that. Like, I think some of the things that you're focused on here is how you stimulate the ecosystem to get more people of, you know, just as I'm looking right here, you know, designed for people of color and women entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And my other point, this interview is about you, but you've gotten me excited now. What I kind of, quick question to go into before we go into programming is, what are kind of the facts around like the success? What I mean by it is, like, I think of a lot of big, like, true darlings of the tech world, and these are a lot of, like, let's call it Silicon Valley companies, mm-hmm. but they're founded by immigrants, you know, that moved, or people so you think of, like, the founders of PayPal, you look at, like, Elon Musk moving here, mm-hmm. Trying to think off the top of my head of some specific other companies, but there are a lot of companies, you know, I mean, it's all around us, success stories of immigrants or people of, you know, in your case, like underrepresented that are having success. Right. So any comments you kind of have on that and any kind of candidly like bullshit stigma that there is around it?
Yeah, I think, I've been in this unique position where I can, good, bad, or indifferent, right? I've been able to see things from both sides, right? So I'm a person, I consider myself pretty, empathetic person, right? I can look at things from other perspectives. And so I can see how easy it is for a, like if you look at the venture capital community, it's predominantly white male even today, right? I think it's something like, 80-something percent. And I can see how easy it is for it to have been that way for so long because of how the networks work, right? And if you make an investment, you have some success, then you're looking for something similar to that, right? Mm. And that begins to look very homogeneous in itself. And then another example I use is, if someone, these folks, let me just put it this way, these folks are getting 50, 100, 200 million, right, to invest. Somebody else's money or whatever, they're institutional investors. And so therefore, immediately,
and just to clarify for people that aren't familiar,
I do not know, right? Before I started this, I did not know a single venture capitalist. Not in my network of friends anywhere. And most of my friends would say the same thing, mm-hmm. right? And so if you say, okay, venture capitalists, name me an African-American or Latino venture capitalist, or it might be a room of 100 of us and nobody would know. Right? Mm-hmm. I would say, on the other side of the fence where white males like, oh yeah, maybe it's my uncle's friend or whatever, but somebody in that network somewhere may be a venture capitalist and can make an introduction. Mm-hmm. Right? That introduction is worth millions of dollars, if you will, in essence, right? Because for that person to get into a venture capitalist, that's a long path.
But I think also where you were going, where I stopped you, was just explaining that a venture capitalist that makes investments into companies is raising money from what are called limited partners.
Yes.
So I think the point you were making is that a lot of the limited partners, I'm just being blunt here, are white males.
Absolutely.
And they're giving it to a white male who's running Absolutely. A venture capital shop. So the flow or pattern recognition, whatever you call it, is that that venture capitalist is then going to feel safer, plus it's the network they know, it's what they, that's what they're going to be pushing
all,
out those funds.
And it's all downstream, right? Yes. So it goes, so the venture capitalist is going to make investments, but the deal flow that they're going to get is basically going to come from friends and people yes. they know, which is going to be predominantly white meals.
So what the hell are you guys doing?
And we're breaking all that.
I love it. I love
we're breaking yeah. all that. That stuff has got to, we got to break it all up, right?
Talk to us about some of the kind of the nitty gritty, like when, you talked about the inspiration and this problem. How'd you guys start tackling it?
Yeah. It's been a heck of a journey, because when we started, I think there was excitement. And there was also skepticism, mm-hmm. right? I had people say to me, well, is there enough pipeline for you to go and do this? What's the talent really, really, really like? Immediately I was like, look, the pipeline is not an issue. The talent is not an issue. It's about opportunity. It's about, opening up the doors and providing a pathway for them, right? So the first thing I talked about is the bridge, right? Let's bridge these, communities together. That's number one. Number two, let's create a more transparent pathway. So I'm going to show you how to get from here, from point A to point D, right? Mm-hmm. And we're going to provide that pathway. And then another piece of what we were saying about DivInc was we want to create a mindset shift. And that mindset shift is on both sides, if you will. One, it's underrepresented community to say it is okay and it's a very viable option for you to become an entrepreneur and a startup founder, right? meaning you can get access to the education, you can get access to the know-how and the mentors and the network and all of that, because we're going to provide that path for you, right? It's okay. It's okay for you to go have the discussion and inspire to have this idea, be creative and go pursue that. Even though you're not making a significant amount of money, but it's okay, and here's the path to go do that. On the other side of the fence, it's okay, Mr. White Male, who happens to be an investor or a mentor, we want to give you visibility and opportunity for you to engage with this whole other set of talent and opportunities to invest your money to maximize your returns. And we're gonna make that happen, right? And I think as a result of doing that over the last 3 years, and from my perspective, not saying it's DivInc only making this happen, but the community comes together and we are actually broadening that ecosystem because more people are participating and more people are engaged. And hopefully what we'll continue to see is that we will be getting higher returns when we invest in women-led companies, when we invest in companies founded by people of color. And so DivInc itself works for early stage, so we're watching our companies progress over time. And so when some of those big ones pop, you know, we'll see those, I think, in the next 2 to 3 years. In the meantime, the biggest thing for us is giving folks the opportunity to really successfully build high growth companies and just be on that pathway to be able to get there, right? To build that confidence, to build the know-how, to build, learn the jargon, learn the game, mm-hmm. right? So they can play successfully. We just keep going with that. So yeah, we do have some success stories of progress and changing folks' lives and trajectory of what they're doing. And we have many more to go.
Well, and I also think that your 3 years in to anything is not really a long time.
It's not a long time.
You know,
it feels long.
It does, but it does. We're about 3.5 years live with, you know, so to speak, products and market and revenue and customers and all
Absolutely.
That at Charity Charge. But it's like, it's only, I would think, within the past, I'd say 12 months, but it really feels the past 6 months that we've been scaling up and we actually, I understand what we're doing.
Right. Right.
And I'm also, things that 6 months ago or a year ago would have looked like a fire, I realize are non-urgent.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
Like, just
be cool.
Just, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get that, you know, level of growth. I'm curious your perspective, like reflecting back, you know, if someone's listening to this and interested in, I know, you know, there's so much specific to your mission, but purely the mechanics of, say someone's listening and is inspired to start their own nonprofit, what's kind of your advice in the framework of the timeline to them of how long it might take? Meaning, like, if someone's starting a nonprofit organization, how do you think that they should think about, you know, the first few years? And,
yeah,
and what type of things could they do to help make them successful? Like, I don't know if you guys put together a board or initially founded it with seed capital or grant capital, just kind of things that, like, if you're starting a nonprofit, some of like the basic building blocks you would advise someone to do.
Yeah, we were in a really crazy situation, I think, because we originally set out to build DivInc as a for-profit, and we were trying to figure out the right business model for DivInc, and realized very quickly that the business model wasn't going to be, you know, something that we would be generating hundreds of thousands of dollars off of, you know, founders, right? So really, you know, so we had to change and we set up a nonprofit. And in doing that, then we're like, okay, you know, we talked to a lot of people. People like, yeah, you're doing DEI in the tech space. It should be easy for you guys to get money. So we said, okay, cool. We set up camp, we got the certification, we started running. And we did not have the financial foundation right out of the gate. And that was, you know, proved to be a challenge, you know, later on. It's like, okay, what is the actual model? How are you going to get funding, you know, into the organization so that you can make it sustainable and scalable? So to your point about your question, I would definitely say, you know, you have a strong mission. It's important. You want to jump right in, but also spend some time with some really good people, experienced people, trying to figure out what your business model is going to be. How are you going to generate funding for your organization, especially in the first few years, so that mm-hmm. you can prove out your mission, you can prove out your vision. So that's one piece. The second piece is to really surround yourself with some really good people. Whether it's just you and one other person, you know, similar to a startup, who are your advisors that are going to help you that may later on become board of directors for your organization? Nonprofits, the success of nonprofits is closely tied with the strength of their board, right? Mm-hmm. How engaged their board is. How good they are in terms of supporting the infrastructure and the strategy and vision, as well as from the fundraising perspective. So definitely have to have that component. And I mentioned the team is critically important. We're a small team of three. And, you know, often people say to us, you know, damn, we thought you guys were like 10 or 15 people. And it's no, just the three of us and leveraging volunteers. Mm-hmm. So the volunteer piece is also pretty important as well. And, you know, really, and then the last piece I would say is focus. It's got to be, you know, focus. As a nonprofit, you can't do too many things all at once because you will basically end up doing, you know,
Man, I wish I had done this interview with you 2 years ago. Where were you then?
Yeah, where was I when I started, right? Yeah,
I could have used that. But I mean, it was... I love you talking about focus.
Yeah, the focus is, you know, on what is your unique value proposition? Because if you're going to raise money, sponsorships from corporations, that has got to be crystal clear, right? If you're going to go after a grant... Mm-hmm. Whatever your value proposition is, it's got to be, you know, it's got to be tight. And then the other piece that's becoming even more and more important these days is, you know, your impact and how do you measure it? Mm-hmm. Right. So you're saying, hey, this is great. It's going to help whatever community, whatever the environment or whatever. That's fine. How do you measure that? How do you measure your success? You know, what is the impact that you can deliver? Because at the end of the day, they may have 1,000 applications and there might be 3 or 4 nonprofit organizations trying to do the same thing that you're doing. But if you can't bring any value to, you know, how your organization's successful or how it drives impact into a community, then it's not gonna, you know, we love you, keep working hard, and we'll see you next year type of thing. Mm-hmm. And so those are the things that I think are really, really, you know, most critical.
Really love how you articulated all of them. I mean, I think it's one of the things that I keep seeing more and more are truly the similarities of a business and a nonprofit.
Oh, yes.
You know.
Very much so.
And I'm curious, yeah, just, you know, a lot of this is, it's a free form interview. So yeah. It's not to like, there's no exam or grade or whatever. You're doing awesome. But when I say that to you, like, just what comes to your top of your mind? I mean, what do you think fundamentally, forget the legal structure. We know that that's a little bit different, but
right.
How similar do you think for-profits and nonprofits are in the underlying fundamentals to make them successful?
I think more and more, they're becoming very, very aligned.
Yeah. This whole aspect, by the way, but like you talk about measurement, I mean, I think that I don't want to say that was unheard of, but it's really almost like a standard, so to speak, that nonprofits are doing now that I don't think they really had to
ever do. No, you didn't have to. exactly.
before, you know, and it's kind of like interesting. Well, the floor can go to you, but yeah, it's just an interesting kind of change.
I mean, I think it's essential, and the way we operate Div Inc. is very much from a startup perspective. So not so much as a nonprofit. I mean, mm-hmm. the nonprofit piece comes in terms of, okay, we have to file paperwork and all of that. But in terms of day-to-day operations, like managing the financials, mm-hmm. you know, we look at forecasting our revenues, mm-hmm. you know, so we know what's coming in, when it's coming in, what, you know, changing the strategy up so that we can maximize revenues, marketing, you know, what's your digital marketing plan? How do we go about, why are we going to do such and such to go outreach to certain organizations to drive a certain amount of engagement? I mean, we're doing all of those things and then, you know, looking at, okay, how do you measure your success? And it was interesting. I was going through an exercise not too long ago where we just had to look at research a variety of different nonprofits for a project we were doing. And the vast majority of them, you will not find any information about their impact. Hmm. Whether it's the quantity or the quality of them, there's nothing on their website, for example, that says this is how many people we served.
One of the things too, I mean, I'm gonna go into kind of the tactical side, sure. and I don't know if you all do this or not, but we'll give them a shout out. One of our, I think I've plugged them on a couple episodes now, but we were originally introduced through our mutual friend, Rad Wood.
Yes.
Who's not only a close friend of mine, also an attorney of ours at Charity Charge. But I was over his place recently, and he's a supporter of Friends of the Children, mm-hmm. Austin, great organization that I was recently with their development director, Caroline Page, to have her on the podcast. Shout out to her as well. But what Rad had on his coffee table, they called it the Gratitude Report 2019. And so I was over his place and we were just sitting, talking a couple people, you know, over, and I look down and I see this and it's got a compelling photo on it, and I open it up and I'm looking through and it's showing both the heart, the emotional side of some one-off anecdotes of the children they've helped. Yeah. But then it also showed the high level, here's our impact, here's how much money we raised, here's where it went, you know, da 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 da. And it was such a awesome touch point,
yeah.
that I think not only that gives a good feedback loop to the individual like Rad, so I'm saying if you're a nonprofit organization, to want to give again.
That's right.
And we talk about a lot on this podcast and just in general as I interact with nonprofits. These are macro statistics, but effectively, there's a 50% drop off of donors year to year. So like donor retention is really tough.
That's huge.
But if you can build that feedback loop, but what I think then is great, that donor not only gets it, like Rad got it, but then it's on its coffee table in a sense for a reason, like he's proud of it. I mean, it just wasn't just something like he really tossed.
Right.
And then I see it and it's a great touch point. And then I'm talking about it and I was telling right. other people about it, whatever. So it's just a way for your organization to message your story directly to your stakeholder, but then, you know, you can have amplification of the awareness if they share that message.
That's right.
You know, and it's something meaningful for them to talk about or tell their friends about.
Yeah, I think it's, I think you'll see, you know, more organizations go that route, nonprofit social impact organizations, definitely should be moving. If they're not moving in that direction, even with Div Inc., we're trying to get more, how do we tell our story? How do we share our impact and, you know, with our donors and sponsors and partners so that they can feel good about what they do? So the whole, you know, this is, it's partner, if you want to compare it to like for-profit, right? It's about that sales, business, relationship development, right? And how do you maintain that, you know, how do you maintain that relationship? How do you make the customers feel good that they're doing business with you, right? Be proud that they're doing business with you. You know, in the for-profit side, it might be individual relationship or, you know, the customer has a relationship with, you know, Michael Dell. Michael Dell came and visited my company. I'm in for life, right? In our case, it's, you know, how do we make them feel good? How do we make them understand the value of their sponsorship
And what are some of the practical things? Because part of what teed this up, you all had an event just recently. Can you talk a little bit about that, just to share like
The Startup Sisters one or the Champions of Change?
The Champions of Change.
Champions of Change. Okay. Yeah, that was back in February.
Awesome.
And so Champions of Change is was our signature fundraising event. And
you know what? Abby from our team went to that as a guest of RAD. So.
Oh, so she was there with RAD.
She was there.
Okay, so I don't know if I got a chance to meet her, but I remember seeing her with RAD.
That's great.
RAD had a good time. RAD had a great time. And so what it is an event to recognize individuals in the Austin community who are driving, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives successfully in Austin. And we wanted to do that because, for the most part, they're not being recognized. And a lot of those folks who are doing this DEI work in Austin are, you know, it's a lot of it is tied to nonprofits and some of it is tied to corporations. So it's bringing the whole, you know, the whole community together. So we wanted to recognize them and then also try to inspire others to support them or just become engaged in the community. And the goal was to bring all these folks into the room, right, with the intent that, or the understanding and the hope that this is going to be a tremendously inclusive event. Right? What we're going to see based on the nominees, based on our community of people. And so that event, our first one, we actually had 300, we oversold a little bit, 300 people, standing room only, and it really accomplished, exceeded our expectations in terms of the celebrations, the recognition, as well as the inspiration that happened at that event. And I will say that we've heard a couple of stories that have come out of there, and one of them I'll share with you. We had a white male investor that came with his partner. Mm-hmm. His partner was actually a sponsor for the event, and I can give her a shout out, Wild Basin Investments, Rosa McCormick, who's a big advocate and supporter of DevInc. So we love Rosa. Rosa brought her partner with her, and he attended the event. About a week later, he's at a luncheon with, you know, another advocate of ours. And they were like, oh, you know, you were there. And it was before she said, oh, it was a great event. She said, well, what did you think? And his initial reaction was, well, you know, it was the first time, you know, I really felt kind of uncomfortable in the room before like that. I've actually never been in the minority. Mm. And so that made me feel somewhat uncomfortable. And so when she told me that, I was like, well, there were quite a few white guys there. They just weren't in the majority. I said, okay, well, that's cool. I get that, what he said. But then he came back and said, well, as a result of that experience, I understand this better now. And I wanna help. I wanna help, you know, how do we make this a more diverse, more inclusive, you know, ecosystem? And I was like, yes, that's what we want to happen, is that mindset shift mm-hmm. that I was talking about earlier. And if he got it, I'm like, okay, then we're ready to rock and roll, right? And so that is the experience that we want people to have. And in a nutshell, it's about engaging. It's about coming together, working together. And, you know, I mean, you know, that's what it is, man. You know.
Well, yeah, and I think so much so your model is predicated on doing that. It's the real world. If you're going to break through barriers and you're going to change things up, the biggest thing that you're changing, it's humans. It's like connecting humans, getting people to open their, you know, view of what's possible.
Absolutely.
So I think creating those events where you bring people together just makes all the sense in the world.
For your model,
and I think that every organization is a little bit different. I mean, the things that you shared many moments ago about kind of the nuts and bolts of the organization are true, but then there's always that other side of like, well, what's unique about our model and our mission, and you're starting to figure those out, and it's great.
Yeah, and it's, I would tell you, people like, well, you know, you have an accelerator program, just like, you know, it's a 12-week accelerator, just like everybody else. So yeah, it is a 12-week accelerator, we do have that. Where it is different is the culture and the community that we have, right? So we're bringing everybody up in here, you know, Black, White, Asian, Middle Eastern, Indian, we've had folks come through here. And as a cohort, they come together and they're spending these 3 months together in collaboration with each other, right? Basically setting the tone for them, like everybody's here to succeed and we're here to help each other to succeed. Likewise, all the mentors and any investors and, you know, people who want to participate, they are of that same mindset as well. If they're not, they will be. Because you can't be up in here if you don't have that mindset. And so slowly but surely, this community just gets bigger and bigger, and you have more people talking about, yes, we want more diversity. More diversity is good. More inclusion is good. Then, yeah, okay, let's continue to do that. And quite honestly, I've seen more co-working spaces and accelerator programs talking about being more inclusive. Some investors, some, we need more, are talking about trying to get, you know, access to a more diverse pipeline of deal flow for them to invest in. So as that is happening, this transformation is happening, that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. And I like to say that Div Inc. is some part of, you know, of helping to make that happen.
You are.
So we're excited about that, you know.
I'm excited for you.
We're excited about that.
It really
that.
Is cool to have this, yeah. You know, and get to know you, you know, better. And I've seen your progression from when it originally started, you know, when we kind of first met a number of years ago, and then to see what you guys are doing now is really cool. And I really appreciate it, because what's the byproduct of, as much as these interviews are about the organization, in this case, Div Inc., I'm just sitting back, just soaking it all in and learning stuff. So I took away a lot of really good stuff. And
that's cool.
I really
that's
appreciate
cool.
your time.
Yeah. I love that you've made the time for us. I really appreciate it, you know, helping get the word out. And we're going to keep doing, man.
I love it. So if people want to get involved, I'm looking behind you. I usually ask the founder, but they can go to divinc.org. That's divinc.org. And that's, I'm sure, where they can learn about, you know, either if they're a want to be a founder or are a founder, they want to get involved in your programming. I'm sure there's also ways they can find out about events and people can understand about your investment kind of ecosystem and how you collaborate with funders as well.
Absolutely. And we love, you know, for people to come on in, whether you're a founder, mentor, investor, you want to get involved, definitely reach out to us. You know, at divinc.org, preston@divinc.org, or Monica Morales is just monica@divinc.org. She's gonna be mad that I gave her email address out there.
Out. Yeah,
but
we
it's
can,
out
we can
there.
Edit that out. No, just,
yeah,
we'll leave
but,
that in.
But yeah, we love it, and thank you. I really appreciate
that's
it.
That's awesome. Hey, no, man. It's really my pleasure.
Thank you, man.
And thank you to everyone who continues to watch and listen along to the Charity Charge Show. It's continues to be an honor, a privilege, and a pleasure to be doing this. Thank you.
Thank you.